Welcome to our Saturday evening Bhagavad Gita class. And since we are on the first chapter, we will chant together the verses. So as you keep on chanting these verses every day, if not every day, at least every week, you will actually see how you develop a liking. By constant practice, we develop attachment. And this holds whether in the material field or the spiritual field. So if you develop a habit of daily chanting these shlokas, then we will develop attachment for them. Then we will look forward to doing it more and more. And then we will develop the desire to try to understand what these shlokas really mean. Then we will start actually reading the translation, reading the word-for-word meaning, and reading the commentary. And in this way, our desire to come to satsang will increase. And in this way, our progress in spiritual life will be ensured. Each of these activities are not ordinary. The chanting of the shlokas from Bhagavad Gita, or speaking or hearing Bhagavad Gita, is not an ordinary act every day. Then we will see the fruits that will be born in course of time. In the first chapter, we have been discussing at this time how Arjun is putting forward reasons for not fighting the battle. The first reason was he felt compassion for his kinsmen. The second reason was that he felt it improper that he should enjoy the kingdom at the expense of the lives of his kinsmen. And if his kinsmen were not there, then what enjoyment would he derive from his opulence and wealth and his kingdom? Because we only like to enjoy these things in the company of those we love. So that was the second reason that Arjuna gave. And we concluded last Saturday by just beginning the third reason why Arjuna was refusing to fight. And that was in text 36, where Arjuna cites the fear of sin accruing as a result of his killing all the kinsmen and the soldiers assembled there. So let's 36 together.
Papam eva shredasman हत्वैतानातितायिनः तस्मान्नार्हा वयं हन्तुम् धार्तराष्ट्रान् स बान्धवान् स्वजनं हि कथं हत्वा सुखिनः स्याम माधव.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. This is Arjuna speaking, please remember. Sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune? And how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? Last time, in the course of the discussion, we did mention that Arjuna's basic mistake here has been that he is confusing sin, or rather religion, with ordinary morality of this world. Arjuna is speaking of committing sin, but he seems to have forgotten what really sin is. What is sin? Sin is simply disobedience to the laws of God. That's all. Very simple. So first of all, we should know what the laws of God are if we are to stop sinning. Just as a citizen of the state should know what are the laws of the state so that he can avoid those which are considered crimes and he can do those activities which are considered worthy of being done. So therefore, one should always know in life what activities should be done and what should not be done. And there should be some standard or some frame of reference to understand. In the Bhagavad Gita 16th chapter, Lord Krishna explains the characteristics of those who are asuric in nature, demoniac in nature. He gives a very lengthy description of the characteristics of such people. And among them he describes pravrittim cha nivrittim cha janana vidurasurah. He says, those who are asuric, they do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. This is an important characteristic of those who are ignorant. They cannot understand. As opposed to the asuras, there are the devas, the godly people. The godly people are supposed to understand what is to be done and what is not to be done. Arjun is a deva. He is a devotee. Therefore, he should know very well what should be done and what shouldn't be, what is sin and what is not. But because he is playing the role of an ordinary conditioned soul, therefore he is acting like any other ignorant person in the outside world who doesn't really know what is sin and what is not sin. So Arjuna is saying, but we will commit sin. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Father of Dharma, is sitting right in front of him, telling him to fight, and Arjuna is thinking in terms of sin and piety. What can be more pious than following the orders of the Lord? This is our duty in life, to follow the instructions of the Lord. When we do that, our life will become happy, successful, and sublime. It is so simple. It is always simpler and happier to just follow somebody's instruction. A leader knows that it is always more difficult to lead than to follow. When you're leading, you always have to think what instruction to give. But when you're following, you have no anxiety. You simply do what you're told. So similarly, if you simply follow the laws of God, you'll be peaceful, you'll be happy. Why should we not do this? Because God doesn't like it. This is piety. Why should we avoid this? Because this is sin as per the instructions of God. So life becomes very simple. But when we start inventing our own rules, then the problem comes. Because when we start talking of rules and do's and don'ts, the question arises, what is good and what is bad? You may think something is good and bad and I may have some other opinion. Everyone in this world has different opinions of what should be done and what should not be done. Should they bomb Afghanistan? Should they not bomb Afghanistan? What should they do? Everybody has different opinions about everything. So where is the standard? In this world, the morality is called relative morality because it changes according to time, place and circumstance and person. You have one conception of morality, I may have another, all of us have our different conceptions of morality. Even in our society, what is considered moral today may be considered immoral tomorrow or vice versa. What is considered moral or acceptable in a Western land, some form of dressing for example, may not be considered very moral here. Certain food habits may be considered moral in some communities but immoral in other communities. So the morality of this world is called relative morality. But the morality that is given by God is called absolute morality. Absolute because it is the same for everyone. It doesn't change with time, place and circumstance. So therefore, when we transgress the laws of God, we commit sin that is absolute. So therefore we have to be very careful. The mistake that Arjuna has made here, he is confusing religion with ordinary morality which is relative in this world. So therefore, the simple formula for us is to just follow the laws of God and not be concerned. By following the laws of God, we are assured of success. There is no possibility of failure because the perfect person is guiding us and giving us what should be done and what should not be done. Arjuna is seeing only misfortune coming out of this battle. And so here he is addressing Krishna as Madhav, the fortune. So Arjuna is seeming to say, my dear Krishna, my dear Madhav, you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, but you seem to be instructing me to perform activities which will bring only misfortune. This doesn't seem to be appropriate. We are going to commit so much of sin. Actually, what Arjuna is going to do is not sin, because he's been instructed by Krishna. But even otherwise, even if he had not been instructed by Krishna, still his act of killing the Kauravas would not have been sin. Why? Because the Shastras explain that there are 6 kind of aggressors who can be killed without incurring sin. Aggressors means those who attack us, to do some harm to us. If people come to attack us or harm us, and in our own defense, if we kill them, then there is no sin attached to that. There are 6 kinds of aggressors that the Shastras talk about. One is a person who attacks you with deadly weapons. The second is a person who gives you poison. The third is a person who sets fire to your house. The fourth is one who kidnaps your wife. The next is one who steals your wealth. And 6th, the one who usurps your land. Anybody tries to do this to you, then you are entitled, according to the Shastra, to kill that person. But of course, we should not immediately go back and try anything in case something like that has happened, because it is against the laws of the state, currently. So although the Shastras permit such an activity, so therefore we have to be very careful that although spiritually we may not incur sin by killing those who attack us, but from the point of view of the law of the state, which doesn't accept the law of the Shastra, we may end up in trouble. So we should not simply blindly follow the laws of the Shastra when it comes to public life. So we have to be careful. But at the same time, we should know that this is a fact, that a person who comes to steal our wealth, plunder our land, is worthy of being killed, and we will not be called sinful for having killed that person. This is very enlightening indeed. So at the same time, Arjuna and all the Pandavas were the subject of aggression under all these 6 counts. Just see, the Kauravas had attacked the Pandavas in all these 6 respects. Just think, the first one, let us say, poison giver. Did the Kauravas try to give poison to the Pandavas? Yes. Duryodhana and the Kauravas, right from childhood, they bore tremendous envy, jealousy and hatred towards the Pandavas. Even as young boys, Bhima was so powerful that when they were playing around in the palace and outside, he would wrestle with all the 100 Kaurava brothers together and defeat them easily. And he would throw them like they were toys. And when they would play in the water, he would dunk them in the water and bully them. So Bhima was a big bully. Because he was so strong, he would always play around playfully. He never realized that what was a joke for him actually was so painful to the other boys. So he would just play around with them. But for them, it used to be very painful. So Duryodhana was always wondering what to do. Then once, when they were young boys, at that time Duryodhana started discussing this matter with his evil uncle, Shakuni. Shakuni also bore a grudge against Dhritarashtra, against Bhishma, I beg your pardon. Because Bhishma got Shakuni's sister, Gandhari, married to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was a blind king. So Shakuni felt offended because of that. Shakuni had desired that his sister should get married to Pandu instead. But Bhishma, what did he do? He brought Gandhari and married her to Dhritarashtra. So Shakuni was always thinking that the cause of this is Bhishma. And the Pandavas are very dear to Bhishma. Therefore, if I in some way harm the Pandavas, I will harm Bhishma. I will be able to extract my revenge. So Shakuni was only too keen to discuss plans of putting down the Pandavas. So when Duryodhana came forward to Shakuni, Shakuni suggested this idea that why don't you give him poison? Bhima likes to eat a lot of food, so mix poison in the food. Duryodhana liked the idea. He discussed it with his brother Dushasan, who was also equally aggrieved by being bullied by Bhima, so they conspired. Then one day, when they were all sitting on the banks of the river, they had been taken by Duryodhana to a nice pleasure garden palace, specially erected by Dhritarashtra for the pleasure of the princes. After they had played, they went to the river banks for a good meal. And Bhima, as usual, ate a hearty meal, enough to feed 20 of the other boys. And at this time, Duryodhana made Bhima sit right next to him. And he was very lovingly serving him. And personally, Duryodhana had mixed a lot of poison. There was enough poison to have killed dozens of human beings. But Bhima easily ate that, and he was very active. He became very energetic after eating so much of food. And then he began playing and tossing the boys and throwing them here and there, pieces of straw. And he threw them in the river and here and there. And this went on from morning till evening. And there was no sign of the poison acting on Bhima. Finally, as the day was drawing to a close, after they took bath in the river and played, all the boys went back to their mansion to rest because they were all tired. And then Bhima started now feeling the effects of the poison. Bhima did not understand that he had been poisoned. But he lay down because he was drowsy. And Duryodhana understood. So very quietly, after all the boys had left, then came with Dushasan, and they tied Bhima in very strong ropes and they rolled him into the water. They could not have lifted him. He was too heavy. So they just rolled him along the ground and he fell into the water. And because he was bound, he sank right below. So Duryodhana and Dushasan became very happy and they came back with great joy. But they concealed their joy. And when all the other boys realized that Bhima was missing, the Pandavas became very aggrieved. They were searching here and there, they could not find. And the Kauravas also pretended as if they were also equally concerned. Oh, where is he? Where is Bhima? And they came back. Kunti also was upset. Everybody was very much disturbed. Meanwhile, Bhima, having traveled down into the bottom of the Ganges, he was somehow transported through the mystical pathways that exist in the bottom of the Ganges River to Nagaloka, which is the kingdom or the planet of the Nagas. And the king of the Nagas is Vasuki. You have heard of Vasuki. He became the rope for the churning in the Samudra Manthan and the churning of the milk ocean by the Devas and the Asuras. So somehow he reached there, being carried by the waves of the river. And the serpents, when they saw a human being, and such a powerful human being at that, out of fear, they suddenly bit him. Many, many snakes came and bit Bhima. And the poison, by the Lord's arrangement, happened to be the perfect antidote for the poison, vegetable poison, that Duryodhana had fed Bhima. So that was the perfect medicine for it. It is all by chance, by providence. So the snake bite, it acted upon the poison, and Bhima became conscious again. And when he realized his condition, he broke open his cords and he killed all the snakes and he wreaked havoc among the snake community. Those few snakes who were still alive, they fled and went back to Vasuki, their king, and narrated what had happened, that some human being has come down. And at that time there happened to be a close friend of Vasuki whose name was Arka. Arka had lived many, many years ago in the human kingdom on the earth. So he came and he understood that by description, this must be Bhima. Because he was actually Bhima's ancestor. This Arka was a great-grandfather of Kunti. So that means Bhima was his great-great-grandson. So Arka immediately recognized that this is Bhima. So he brought him back. And he was treated with great affection and in royal fashion. And he stayed there for 8 days. And Arka and Vasuki suggested, yes, now we should feed Bhima with ras, some special kind of juice, nectar, which was available only in Nagaloka. And they said, by partaking of this nectar, my dear Bhima, you will get the strength of 10,000 elephants. Already Bhima was so powerful, and now he got this rasa. And usually, each jar of rasa, the residents of Nagloka would take a long time to drink. But Bhima, he just quaffed each jar of that rasa in one gulp. And all the residents of Nagloka were astonished to see this power of Bhima. And he drank many, many such jars and pots of rasa. And so much he drank that he ultimately became, he lay down to sleep. And he slept for 8 consecutive days and nights, just in order to digest that rasa and to assimilate it in his body. And finally, after 8 days, the rasa was assimilated and he rose as strong as 10,000 elephants. And then Vasuki and Arkadanda said, now it is time for you to go back because all of the family members must be grieving for you. So Vasuki gave him wonderful nice silk clothes, and in a few seconds they were transported by the mystic pathway through the Ganges onto the shore, on the banks of the Ganges. And then Bhima began roaring with his newfound strength, and he headed back for the palace. And when the Pandavas and the mother Kunti and Bhishma and others saw, they were overjoyed. Duryodhan was internally shocked, but he also pretended as if he was very happy. And finally Bhima came back. And at this time Bhima very quietly narrated to the Pandavas what had happened. And Yudhishthir suggested, because even though Yudhishthir was only a small boy, but he was still the wisest among them all. He was still very wise. And he suggested that we should not tell this to anyone. We should keep this a secret, that Duryodhan has poisoned our brother in this way. Because if the news leaks out, then there will be open enmity. Now it is only playful enmity, but it will become enmity among our elders, and that will cause havoc in our whole dynasty. So we should keep quiet. We should just be careful. Kunti Maharani confided in Vidur, and Vidur said, yes, what Yudhishthir is saying is correct. Just keep the matter quiet, but just be careful. Be vigilant, because the Kauravas are very envious of the Pandavas. So in this way they continued on. And Bhima moved on from strength to strength. The Pandavas were becoming more and more popular. And again this time, Duryodhan tried to poison Bhima for a second time. He mixed Dhatura poison in the food. But this time, another brother of Duryodhan, he spilled the beans. He came and told this matter to Yudhishthir. And this brother's name was Yuyutsu. Yuyutsu was the 101st son of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra had 101 sons, not 100. Most people think Dhritarashtra had 100 sons. He had 100 sons through Gandhari. But he had also one son through another maidservant. And this son was called Yuyutsu. He was a good man. He was not like the other Kauravas. He always had some good feelings towards the Pandavas. So Yuyutsu understood that Duryodhan had poisoned Bhima for a second time. So when he told this to Yudhishthir, Yudhishthir warned Bhima. But by now Bhima already had the strength of 10,000 elephants, and he was rejuvenated by the rasa that he had taken in Nagaloka. So he laughed off the threat. And very happily he ate the food, and the poison had absolutely no effect on him. In this way, Duryodhan should have, according to the principles of Shastra, been killed by the Pandavas even at that time. The Pandavas led by Yudhishthir had every right to kill Duryodhan and the Kauravas right there, even in their boyhood. But they did not kill. The second form of aggressor is one who sets fire to one's house. So were the Kauravas guilty of that? Yes. What did the Kauravas do? When the Kauravas saw that the Pandavas are becoming very popular with the subjects, and everybody is saying now that Yudhishthir should become king, because Dhritarashtra was only the king for the time being. This was the arrangement. Because Pandu was cursed and he had gone to the forest, so only temporarily Dhritarashtra was on the throne till Yudhishthir would become an adult. And then Yudhishthir was to sit on the throne. That was the understanding. And now that Yudhishthir had come back, and the Pandavas have grown up young lads, and they were capable of taking the throne, so the subjects were all talking like this. And Duryodhan heard this, and he became very disturbed. And he came to Dhritarashtra and said that this is what the people are talking. And it is intolerable for me. I cannot bear the thought that the Pandavas will now succeed. They will come onto the throne and we will be deprived of our kingdom. So we should do something. So Duryodhan would constantly speak to his father about this, revealing his envious heart about the Pandavas. And out of affection for his sons, even though they were evil, Dhritarashtra also became affected by that evil tendency. And he also hatched a plot. And Duryodhan suggested that there is a place, Varnavata, where there is a nice festival held for Lord Pashupati, Lord Shiva. So maybe we should send the boys away there. We should send the Pandavas away there. So Dhritarashtra said, but that may be dangerous. Because the public, the praja, they will protest because they love the Pandavas very much. And not only that, even Drona, Bhishma, etc., Kripacharya, they will all protest and they will not allow this to happen. Duryodhan says, my dear father, do not worry. I have planned it very well. As far as the praja is concerned, from today, I will start pacifying them and winning them over to my side by giving them lots of gifts. And as far as Bhishma is concerned, he has sworn loyalty to the throne, so he is not going to protest. And as far as Drona is concerned, his son Ashwatthama is my best friend. He is very loyal to me. And Drona is very attached to Ashwatthama. So if Ashwatthama sticks by me, Drona will also stick by me. And as far as Kripacharya is concerned, his sister is married to Drona. So therefore, whatever Drona does, Kripa will do. Only person who is doubtful is Vidur. Vidur will side with the Pandavas. But what can Vidur do anyway? He does not have any power to harm us. So don't worry, my dear father. So Dhritarashtra was convinced. And from that day on, Dhritarashtra started cultivating and pampering all the praja. He would call different people, give them gifts. He suddenly started becoming very kind to all his subjects. Yudhishthir, being very intelligent, was noticing all these things happening. And he smelt a rat, that Duryodhan has become suddenly very kind and generous to his subjects. Something is in the offing. There is a saying that Ati Bhakti Chore Lakshan. That if somebody suddenly becomes very kind to you, very devoted and loving to you, you can understand this person has some intention. He wants something from me. So therefore, Yudhishthir immediately understood that something is going on, but he kept quiet. And as time went on, by Duryodhan's plan, all the ministers of Dhritarashtra constantly started speaking about Varanavat in the assembly. Every day someone would speak something to say how wonderful is Varanavat. So this was a very intelligent plan, so that by so much talk about Varanavat, one day Dhritarashtra could easily suggest to Yudhishthir that please go there. And one day Dhritarashtra did that. He said to Yudhishthir, my dear boy, we have heard that the Varanavat is a very, very wonderful place where there are nice pleasures available and it's a very holy place, many places to see, many things to do, and the people of that land are very eager to see you. So why don't you all go there and stay for some time? Now Yudhishthir understood. So this was the plot. But in his mind, although he understood, he did not want to disobey his father's, uncle's instructions. He said, if I openly disobey, this will cause problems. So then, he accepted the order. The matter was discussed among the Pandavas. Immediately they understood that something is in the offing. And as they were leaving, all the residents of Hastinapur came. They were crying. They did not want separation from the Pandavas. But nevertheless, they had to go. The Pandavas pacified the residents. And as they were leaving, Vidur came there. because Vidur understood what the plan was. But he did not want to speak the truth openly in front of everyone because there were many people assembled there. So Vidur spoke in a dialect of a particular Mlecha tribe. And that dialect Yudhishthir also understood because Yudhishthir knew many languages. So he spoke in this Mlecha tribe dialect. And he spoke in coded language. Not only did he speak in a different language, but he also spoke in codes. Only Yudhishthir was intelligent enough to understand that coded language. To everybody else, it was totally Greek and Latin. They did not understand anything. Even Kunti Maharani could not understand, but Yudhishthir understood. And as soon as Vidur had left, Kunti asked Yudhishthir, "What did he say? What did Vidur come and tell you?" So at that time, Yudhishthir replied, "Our uncle Vidur has told me that we have been taken to Varnavat and our house will be burnt down and he will make some arrangements for us to escape and we have to wait for the right time to hear the method of escape." So when they heard this, Bhima became very angry. He said, "Right here and now I will go and kill all of them." "No, no, no. Calm down. We will not do anything rash now. We will go along with the plan. We don't want to do anything that will harm our dynasty and create trouble in our kingdom." So they went away quietly, and as soon as they entered Varnavat, the subjects were very happy to receive them, to see them. And when they entered this palace that was specially made by the agent of Duryodhan, whose name was Purochan, Yudhishthir immediately smelt, this house has been made of lac and also ghee and oil, so that this is highly inflammable, and even a small little flame will set the whole house on fire. So what to do? So each night they by turns kept awake, just in case suddenly the house caught fire, they would be agile and they would be able to run out. Meanwhile, one man came who said that he was an agent of Vidur, and he quoted that conversation that Vidur had with Yudhishthir. So they understood that he was a man. And you know the story, you've heard this from childhood. This miner dug a tunnel, and then one day one Nishad lady came with her 5 sons. They were intoxicated, they were tribes people, uncultured people, they were totally drunk, and they fell asleep in that courtyard. And Yudhishthir and the Pandavas decided that 1 year has passed, now let us take action now. They themselves set the house on fire and they escaped through the tunnel. Purochan also died, and the Nishad woman with the 5 sons died, and everybody thought after seeing the bodies that the Pandavas and Queen Kunti had died. There was only one person who knew the truth, and that was Vidur. Vidur knew that the Pandavas had escaped. Any case, they came back, and then you know the story. So in the second way also, the Kauravas had hatched a plot to set their house on fire. So even then, the Pandavas would have been within the limits of dharma if they had killed the Kauravas. So at every stage we see that the Pandavas should have actually rightfully killed the Kauravas many times over. But they just did not, simply so that there would be no trouble, to avoid bad name in the dynasty. The third thing, one who attacks with deadly weapons. That they were already ready to do right here, standing on the battlefield. When Arjuna told Krishna, "Please take me to the center of the battlefield, Ratham Sthapaya Mechyuta," he said, "Please take me to the center of the battlefield so that I can see all my relatives who are standing with weapons upraised, ready to attack me." So all the people, Kauravas and others, were waiting to attack with weapons. So therefore, the Kauravas were fully in the realm of dharma to defend themselves and also to attack the Kauravas themselves. The next one is one who plunders riches and one who usurps one's land. Shakuni, by his cheating in the gambling match, he did just that. He stole all the wealth that Yudhishthir had. They took away the kingdom. And not only that, they also kidnapped the wife of the Pandavas, Draupadi. So therefore the Pandavas had every right to kill the Kauravas. Even though tomorrow evening I will kill Jayadratha, and if I'm not successful, I will enter the fire. So the same Jayadratha, when the Pandavas were in exile living in the forest, and when the Pandavas were out of the ashram, and Draupadi was there alone in the ashram along with Dhaumya and few of the Brahmanas, and Jayadratha forcefully kidnapped Draupadi. And he was one of the Kauravas also. He was all aligned with them. So Draupadi was kidnapped twice. So if you see by this definition, the Kauravas were certainly aggressors many times over. And therefore, there was absolutely no sin if the Pandavas were to kill the Kauravas. So therefore, Arjuna's conception that it would be sin is wrong. He mentions here, papam eva achareyad asman hatvaitan atatayinah. The word atatayi means aggressor. So Arjuna accepts that the Kauravas are aggressors, but still he feels papam eva ashrayed asman. He feels that to kill the aggressors is sin. But actually that is not so. But anyway, Arjuna is giving so many reasons. And also, as a Kshatriya, Arjuna's order, Arjuna's dharma was to fight. But he was a saintly person. He was a great devotee of the Lord. So due to his saintliness, he felt that he must forgive. They are aggressors, it doesn't matter. After all, it's okay, I am a devotee of the Lord and I must be forgiving, I must have compassion, so it's alright. So Srila Prabhupada explained in his commentary that this kind of saintliness is alright in principle in the heart, but a Kshatriya cannot afford to be like this. A Kshatriya cannot display cowardice in the name of being saintly. The example of Lord Ram is given. Lord Ram's wife, Sita Devi, was kidnapped by Ravan. Lord Ram did not think I should forgive Ravan. As a Kshatriya, it was his duty to punish the evildoers. Therefore, he punished Ravan and his kingdom and his soldiers very severely and taught them lessons that are unparalleled in history. So similarly, Arjuna, having been subjected along with his brothers to all these insults and aggressions from the Kauravas, should not have hesitated on the pretext of being saintly. He should have gone ahead and fought. But nevertheless, Arjuna is thinking like this. Your own son set fire to your own house. What will you do? Will you kill him? According to Shastra, you are entitled to kill him. But you will think, after all, my own son, what to do? The same thing with Arjuna. Yes, he said, I agree. They are aggressors. By Shastra, I am authorized to kill them. I should kill every one of them. I should have done it many times over. But what to do? They are still my brothers. And not only brothers, there is my guru, Dronacharya. There is my grandfather, Bhishma. All these are revered, worshipable personalities. They are not ordinary people who are aggressors upon me. So all right, let it be. They are aggressors. I will forgive. So this is the mood in which Arjuna is at the moment. The Acharyas also explain another reason behind Arjuna's logic. They say that the instruction or the injunction that one can kill one's aggressors without incurring sin is found in the Arthashastra. But there are other Shastras called Dharma Shastras. And in the Dharma Shastras it is said that one should not kill or quarrel with one's superiors, the priests, those who are elder to us, those who are Brahmanas, those who are worshipable for us, and so on. So Dharma Shastra and Artha Shastra were now in conflict. But Dharma Shastra is superior. Therefore Dharma Shastra holds good. Now this kind of dilemma did come to Arjuna after the battle of Kurukshetra. When the whole battle of Kurukshetra was finished practically, and the Pandavas had emerged victorious, Ashwatthama was boiling with rage because his father Dronacharya had been killed unjustly against the principles of dharma. So he was seeking revenge. And at night, when everybody was sleeping, he attacked the five sons of Draupadi, thinking them to be the five Pandavas. Now, according to the codes of Kshatriya warfare, you should never attack an enemy when he is asleep, and you should not fight at night. You have to fight in the daytime, when the enemy is able to see you and he is able to counter your weapons. But Ashwatthama did a very cowardly act. He killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, and Draupadi became extremely aggrieved on seeing that. And when Arjuna saw what Ashwatthama had done, and he saw the grief of Draupadi, he swore that he would punish Ashwatthama and kill him. So Ashwatthama became very afraid when he saw Arjuna approaching, and he ran away. And he fled in great fear, but Arjuna pursued him. And at that time, Ashwatthama, realizing that his horses were tired and they could not go, and Arjuna was coming very quickly close to him, at that time Ashwatthama, in his desperation, he let loose that ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra. Now, just like Abhimanyu knew how to enter the Chakravyuha but didn't know how to come out of it, similarly Ashwatthama knew how to release the Brahmastra but didn't know how to withdraw it and bring it back. The Brahmastra is the most powerful weapon in the universe, among the earthly planets at least. And it has enough power to cause tremendous destruction. In front of the Brahmastra, our atom bombs are like children's toys. But the special feature of the Brahmastra is that it will, if you wish, target only one or more people or things that you wanted to hit and no one else. It's like the atom bomb. If you drop the modern atom bomb like they did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of the Second World War, so many lakhs of people were killed. But here in Brahmastra, one who throws that weapon has control on where the weapon will fall and to whom it will kill, because he has to chant certain mantras when he does that. So in his desperation, he released the Brahmastra. And when this huge light was coming, everybody became very afraid. And Arjuna, who was chasing Ashwatthama, suddenly became afraid. He asked Krishna, who was with him, "My dear Krishna, where is this terrible light and heat coming from?" And Krishna explained, "This is the Brahmastra that has been released by Ashwatthama. And Ashwatthama does not know how to withdraw it. So the only way to counter this is to yourself release another Brahmastra, which will clash and they will destroy each other." So Arjuna did that. He also invoked the Brahmastra. He threw that against the Brahmastra released by Ashwatthama, and both the Brahmastras destroyed each other. And there was such a great flash, it appeared as if it was the end of the universe. Such a huge explosion took place. And anyway, finally, Arjun arrested Ashwatthama, and he bound him like an animal with ropes, and he dragged him to Draupadi, because Draupadi was a grief party. And Arjun had promised Draupadi that, "I will bring Ashwatthama in front of you." And initially, Draupadi had been seeking revenge. But when she saw the humiliating condition of Ashwatthama, being a lady, she became a little soft. She became compassionate. And she said, "No. Ultimately, he is a son of our Guru. And he is a Brahmin. So therefore, we should not harm him anymore. We should not kill him now. I forgive him." Just see how difficult it is for a mother of five children who have been slain by a man, and she has immediately forgiven the killer. But Bhima was in no mood to forgive. Bhima said, "Under no conditions, if you don't kill, I will kill." So Arjuna was in a dilemma, what to do. On one hand, his wife is saying, release him. And on the other hand, Bhima is saying, kill him. So Arjuna looked at Krishna, as he always did whenever he was in any difficulty. And Krishna replied, "It said in the Shastra that a Brahmana's son or a Brahmana, even if he has fallen from his position and committed a sin, he should never be killed. On the other hand, the Shastra also says that if somebody attacks you and kills you with deadly weapons, then you have every right to kill him without incurring sin.
So Krishna stopped at that. He gave both these options to Arjuna and said, so Arjuna is thinking, now what is the meaning of this, what to do? So he immediately understood. He caught Ashwatthama and chopped off his hair. He cut off all his hair and also the jewel that he was wearing in his hair. So when a Kshatriya's hair is cut in this fashion, it is a great humiliation and dishonor. And for a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. Therefore, at one stroke, Arjuna very intelligently killed Ashwatthama, and yet he didn't kill Ashwatthama. So he understood the purport in what Krishna was saying. But still physically he didn't destroy the body of Ashwatthama. So this was Arjuna's mentality. Arjuna was more inclined to think in this way. So the same logic was operating in Arjuna's mind as he was here standing in front of the battlefield, surveying all the Kauravas, seeing his grandfathers and gurus and elders and brothers and those who were like his sons and sons-in-law and so on. So he was thinking that how can I do something like this? It is Dharma Shastra versus Artha Shastra. Dharma Shastra is superior. So even though they are aggressors and I am entitled to kill them, but Dharma Shastra says that my superior should not be killed. So therefore, my dear Krishna, what does he say? What should we gain? O Krishna, O husband of the goddess of fortune, and how could we be happy by killing our kinsmen? Svajanam hi katam hatva sukhina syama madhava. O Madhav, by killing our svajana, how can we ever be happy? It is not possible. Therefore, I will not fight. So he continues with the same logic in text 37 and 38. Please remember that we are on the third reason why Arjuna is refusing to fight. So let us chant text 37 and 38.
Yadyapyete na pashyanti lobhopahata cetasaha kulakshayakritam dosham mitra drohe cha patakam katham najeyamasmabhi papat asma nivartitum kulakshayakritam dosham prapashyadbhe janardana. O Janardana, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? So Arjun is continuing that logic. He is saying that these people, the Kauravas, their intelligence has been destroyed by greed. Lobha upahata cetasaha. Upahata means it is absorbed in or it is stolen by greed, lobha, the cetasa, their consciousness is completely destroyed because of greed. They have lost their senses. They don't know what is proper and what is improper. When a man becomes very greedy and selfish, he doesn't always discriminate what is good and what is bad, what should be done, what should not be done. Greed can destroy a man's intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna is explaining, earlier, later on he will explain, that there are three gateways to hell. Lust, greed and anger. Trividham narakasyedam. These three doors to hell are there. What are they? Lust, greed and anger. When one becomes possessed by any one or more of these three items, one's intelligence is destroyed, and one may perform activities that eventually will bring about one's own destruction. We all know how people destroy themselves, their wealth, their family and society simply because of greed. Kaun banega karolpati? Everybody wants to be karolpati.
Nobody is satisfied with what their lot brings to them. Nobody is thinking that we should try to be gunavan. We should try to be full of nice, wonderful spiritual qualities. That we should be an abode of forgiveness, compassion, learning, wisdom, religiosity. Nobody wants to be. Nobody wants to be gunavan. Everybody wants to be dhanavan. Everybody wants to be karodpati. So therefore, out of greed, people gamble. People do so many things. So therefore, out of greed, the Kauravas wanted the kingdom. So Arjuna is saying that these people, they don't see any fault in destroying the kingdom. Kulakshaya kritam dosham mitra drohe cha patakam. That they are willing to destroy the family. Kulakshaya kritam dosham, that there is a dosh, there is a fault in destroying the family, they are not able to see. And even for the sake of this kingdom, they are willing to fight. Mitra drohe cha patakam. They are willing to fight even their relatives. The greed has destroyed their intelligence to such an extent. But what does Arjuna say? Yadyapyete. That even though na pashyanti, they do not see, my dear Arjuna, my dear Krishna, but we can see. We can understand. We have not become greedy. We have not become selfish. Our intelligence is not lost. So therefore, katham na deyam asmabhihi papadasman nivartitum. He uses the word asmabhi, us. He doesn't say I. So he's including Krishna very intelligently. So he's telling Krishna, my dear Krishna, the Kauravas are unintelligent. Krishnas, they have lost their intelligence, lost their senses. But we have not lost our senses. We still know what is dharma, what is not. Therefore, why should we do the same thing? We know what is bad that we should not do. They do not know, so they are forgiven. If an ignorant person performs a sin, it is still a sin, but the gravity is less. When a person knowingly does a sin, then the punishment is more for him. Just like, if an ordinary person performs an immoral activity, then people will criticize, but it's all right, they will forget tomorrow. But if a sannyasi does an immoral activity, then people will criticize a million times more. So therefore it is said, sannyasira alpachitra bahukori mane. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, cautioning, he says those who are sannyasi should be very careful. Because even alpachitra, even if there is a small mistake on the part of a sannyasi, the public will make it out to be very big. Because a sannyasi is supposed to know better. So similarly, Arjuna's reasoning or logic to Krishna is, Kauravas are ignorant, they did not know. They are selfish, they have lost their senses, but we are full of knowledge, we know what is better, we are cultured, we are Arya. Katham na jnayam asmabhi. So why should we, knowing fully well what is principle of dharma, why should we engage in this horrible activity, kulakshaya, kritam, dosham, which is full of dosha, prapashyat bhid janardana, when we can see the dosha, the fault involved in this activity, why should we do this? And Arjuna's reasoning was that yes, as a kshatriya, whenever I am challenged for battle or for gambling, I should be willing to fight. But here, there is also another etiquette for a kshatriya. In normal circumstances, when a kshatriya is challenged to a duel, he must accept. But this obligation extends only if the outcome of the battle, if the outcome is going to be evil, then the kshatriya is no longer obliged to accept that challenge. Then if a kshatriya comes and challenges him and the other kshatriya refuses because the outcome will be bad for the whole world, then this kshatriya is not considered as acting against the kshatriya behavior. So Arjuna is thinking, kulakshaya, the whole family will be destroyed. The whole dynasty will be destroyed. All the kshatriyas in the world will be destroyed. Because everybody from corners of the world have come here, assembled here to fight this battle. Not a single kshatriya will be left. And of course, Arjuna is going to continue this train of logic in the next shloka also. But he's saying, is this not evil? If the kshatriyas of the world are going to die, who will protect the brahmanas, the vaishyas and the shudras? Who will perform this activity? So definitely, kulakshaya kritam dosham, it is definitely a great dosh. And because evil will come out of this battle, out of killing them, therefore, it is alright for me to not accept this challenge. There is no fault. In normal conditions, if they had challenged me to a duel, I should have fought. But because of the evil consequences that will be coming out of this, even if I don't fight, no problem. It is alright. Because the effect, the result is going to be evil. So see how intelligent is Arjuna. Arjuna is not an ordinary man. He gives so much logic, so many reasons, and all are sound reasoning. Perhaps if we were faced with Arjuna in this position, and Arjuna was giving us all these arguments, we would have been defeated. And we may have agreed with Arjuna, all right Arjuna, you are correct. Your arguments are so powerful, we cannot defeat you. So do as you think fit. But the person who was facing Arjuna was not an ordinary person like you as a Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna himself. So Krishna is now simply patiently hearing what Arjuna has to say. And when Krishna's time will come, then he will demolish all these arguments of Arjuna. So, there is one more verse we can take since there is some time. There is text 39. So with this argument, Arjuna has concluded his third reason for not wanting to fight. And what is that third reason? That third reason is the fear that he will commit sin. Text 39. Kindly chant after me. Kulakshaye pranashyanti kuladharma sanatanah dharme nashte kulam krishnam adharmo bhivavatyuta. With the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. Now Arjuna is beginning to talk about his fourth reason for not fighting this battle. What is that? He fears kulakshaya pranashyanti, when the whole dynasty pranashyanti is destroyed, what will happen? Kula dharma tanatana dharme nashte. But the kula dharma or the eternal family traditions will be destroyed. And when all the family traditions are destroyed, what will happen? Kulam kritnam adharma abhivavatputa. Then all the family traditions will be destroyed and the whole family will become irreligious. Arjuna is going to extend this logic in the subsequent verses also. But here, in the fourth reason, Arjuna's logic is as follows. In the battle, all the dynasty is going to be killed. Kulakshaya pranashyanti. Then when the dynasty is destroyed, what happens? Kula dharma sanatana, dharme nashte. So naturally, when the elders are not there, then the religious tradition will be stopped. So what is this kula dharma? What is this family tradition that is being spoken of here? The family tradition here is according to the varnashram system. Varnas and ashram. We are brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. For each of these four varnas and four ashrams, there are prescribed rules and regulations to be done. So this is called kula dharma. And who is the one who supervises this? The elders. The elders have been trained by their elders when they were young. So if the elders are killed, then the younger people will become irreligious. They will forget to do their religious activities. And therefore the whole world will be absorbed in irreligious activity. This is Arjuna's logic. Just see how wonderful Arjuna's logic is. It is almost irrefutable. It's correct. What Arjuna is saying is correct. Of course, we will discuss more about this verse next time. So Arjuna is now going to begin a line of reasoning, which will take him 3 or 4 verses to finish. And Arjuna will not be satisfied. He will go still further. And finally, when we come to chapter 2, it is only then that Lord Krishna will begin speaking. So we will continue with text 39, after having heard a brief introduction now, in the next program, that is next week, Saturday. And we will continue and finish the 4th reason for Arjuna's refusing to fight this battle. So are there any questions?